Maneuvers Day. During my sophomore year of college, I decided I wanted to get into education and help mold the youth of tomorrow. So that summer, I decided to seek employment at a summer sailing camp called Camp Fuller by the Sea, a YMCA camp on Salt Pond in Rhode Island. Now, Salt Pond is actually a very large saltwater inlet that comes in from Point Judith. I applied for the job a little too late, as all the counselor positions had been taken. The only thing left was that of camp driver. The director told me, though, I would be sleeping in the boathouse with about 20 junior counselors, ranging in the age from 14 to 16, and that I would be the adult presence. I said, "I'll take it." And it's yo-ho-ho, off I go to work at the sailing camp, don't you know? The first night in the boathouse was great. We all took out our guitars, we sang, we talked, and I thought to myself, life doesn't get any better than this. Then suddenly, six kids jumped up, bolted out the door, ran down the beach, and dove into the water. I ran to the porch, and I saw, coming down the pond, a tour boat with a searchlight and a voice saying, "And over on our left, a young boy's delight. Everything a young boy could want to do. They have sailing. They have water skiing. They have camping. They have swimming." While listening to this verbal intrusion, I watched as the searchlight panned up the dock along the sleeping sailboats, past the ski boat, past the totem pole, and then across the swimming area and came to rest on the diving platform. It paused for a moment, and then was suddenly whisked away when he realized the moons he was seeing were not reflections in the water. And it's yo-ho-ho, off they go, to quiet that tour boat, don't you know? Be it with buns or be it with bread, will make those tourists turn their heads. Well, I thought it was pretty cool. However, the camp director called me into his office and told me that my adult presence skills had something to be desired. It was then I realized that these kids were going to be molding me and not the other way around. Each day I would drive into town, pick up supplies, pick up mail, pick up laundry, and pick up my guitar, and then play songs for the rest of the day. In addition, I'd make magic fires for the council rings, teach snorkeling, and of course, sing songs. Many nights I was asked to sing in the tents because it helped put the kids to sleep. I was honored back then, but after hearing tapes made from that time of my life, sometimes I wonder whether it wasn't out of self-defense that they fell asleep. Now, the sailing program was headed by Admiral Stephen Bigelow Barlow, who is now a nationally renowned scrimshaw artist whose work I've seen in craft shops all across the country. The vice admiral was Andy Avedisian, and the two of them ran a program that created very competent sailors. Now one day, someone with entirely too much time on their hands figured out how to put a cannon on a 15-foot sailboat. No, not the iron and gunpowder kind, but the Clorox bottle and shock cord kind. The cannon was a slice of Clorox bottle with each end wrapped around a 4-foot length of shock cord. The ends of the cord from one side were tied to the stern cleat. The other ends were tied one to the top and one to the bottom of the shroud protector, a 4-foot plastic tube that protected the sail and the people from the turnbuckle on the shroud. The shroud is the wire that holds up the mast on a sailboat. The cannonball was a sheet of newspaper, wadded into a ball and wrapped a couple times with masking tape, and then sprayed with orange fluorescent paint. Now, some of you might be thinking, why not use water balloons? Well, you can't fill a water balloon when you're out in a boat. And when they hit, they break, and you can't recover them and reuse them. No, a big paper wad loaded with salt water and a little fish saliva would do just fine. A giant spitball. Now that's a cannonball. There were 12 boats in our fleet, 6 gold and 6 blue. So we piled 6 kids and a counselor into each boat, and so Maneuvers Day was born. Now, The rules of engagement were this. If your sail got hit, it had to come down for a minute. Two hits to your hull, and you were sunk and out of the battle. If a person got hit, that person had to stay on that spot in the boat for the rest of the battle and not move. In reality, it became one of those virtual reality rules, because in reality, virtually no one stayed put after they got hit. Unless, of course, they were knocked unconscious by one of those giant spitballs. Now, the slings on the boat were always manned by a counselor, and some poor camper would have to man the tiller and steer the boat. These slings were lethal, as they could shoot the length of a football field. To scale, it was kind of like having guns on the Bismarck that could shoot 20 miles away. So you'd think that hitting another sailboat would be kind of easy. Well, in fact, we couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. So it took a lot of spitballs and a lot of yelling of commands at the poor skipper camper who was at the helm as the action intensified. The summer was divided into three-week sessions. Maneuvers Day was born during the first session. Everyone wanted to be in on it. And for that day and the next day, that's all we talked about. Now, Admiral Bigelow Barlow commanded the Gold Fleet, and Vice Admiral Andy Avedisian commanded the Blue. The fleets went to separate sides of the pond, and the battle began. Of course, during the battle, the rules were made up to the winner's advantage. Someone declared that when you sunk a boat, you could claim their booty, the slings and the cannonballs. Now the boats could have not one, but two, three, or four slings. But of course, the Admiral's boats always got to start out with two slings. The Gold Fleet won that day with two boats left afloat. But talk of a rematch ran rampant during the next few weeks as the second session approached. Now, a week before Maneuvers Day, Rooster strutting and Muhammad Ali boasting was everywhere. "We are the greatest," or "We will float like a butterfly, sting like a bee, and you'll all meet Davy Jones at the bottom of the sea." Well, the day came and the fleet set out. And the Blue Fleet won, with three boats still afloat. Vice Admiral Andy Avedisian had the bragging rights now, and he was rubbing it in and spreading it all around. Rumors arose that if Admiral Bigelow Barlow lost the next round, he could be replaced as head of the sailing program. Admiral Bigelow Barlow was beside himself. His reputation would be ruined, and the fate of his Scrimshaw business hung in the balance. But soon, attention turned to that last session, the last battle, the final showdown. Nothing was more important than Maneuvers Day. Secret strategy meetings in every tent, weather reconnaissance, computer modeling of tidal data, nothing was left to chance. Boasting started 2 weeks before, but soon it died down. No one wanted to make the mistake of giving away their plans. The day of the battle, no one spoke. The silence was deafening. Testosterone-laden air was so thick an icebreaker couldn't cut through it. The fleets left the port and assembled out at sea. This was it, the day we had put our hearts and souls into, the day that would define our manhood forever. At the appointed time, the fleets sailed off to engage each other. First, a gold ship was sunk, then another gold ship was sunk, and then another gold ship was sunk. Admiral Bigelow Barlow remained steadfast and maneuvered his remaining ships in a brilliant port tack windward assault rounding from the south of Firework Island. Five blue ships were sunk, though two gold ships also perished. Now there was only two boats left, Admiral Bigelow Barlow's and Admiral Andy Avedisian's. They retreated to gather booty and load a full complement of slings. They turned towards one another and approached on beam reaches. All the crews from the sunken ghost ships were fixed on the last remaining boats. watching, hoping, praying that their leader would be victorious. The boats met and began circling for an advantage, waiting for the other boat to make a mistake, a bad tack, run aground, or lose a sailor overboard. Then someone yelled,
"Torboat!"
The admirals commanded their ghost ships to action. Slings and ammo was passed all around. The gold and blue ships sailed off together to drive away the dreaded torboat. The battle was over, but the real fun was just beginning. And it's yo-ho-ho, off we go to sink that tour boat, don't you know? Be it with buns, balls, or bread, we'll make those tourists turn their heads. The Blue Fleet